Welcome to the fifth episode of Celluloid Tunes and the first international edition. Celluloid Tunes is the first and only webcast about film music in Norway. And my name is Tor Joachim Haga. Now, it might seem a bit weird, at least for our Norwegian listeners, that I've suddenly switched to English, especially because my pronunciation and intonation is a strange mix of British, American and Norwegian. But I do hope that I am understandable, at least, which is the most important thing. I actually intend to have an international edition in English every 5 episodes or so, just so I can reach a wider audience. Because I have film music colleagues and friends who are very curious about what I'm doing. So I'm going to give this a try and then see how it goes. I've thought a lot about the topic for this first international episode. Because as soon as you sort of venture outside the borders of Norway and Scandinavia, the level of knowledge among fans increases exponentially. So it's a bit difficult to find a topic that sort of offers them something new, while at the same time avoiding being too esoteric in a way. So that's why I landed on the topic of female film composers. Now, it might seem a bit strange and maybe constructed to sort of delineate that clearly between male and female film composers, since one's sex doesn't really matter in the scheme of things. The proof is in the pudding, as they say. However, it's a fact that film music is a very male-dominated industry, and when I tried to assemble a list of female film composers, I only managed to think of about 40 names. And out of those, really only a handful or two that have sort of made an impact throughout film history. Why this is the case is another discussion altogether, and I'm not going to try that in this particular episode. The good thing, however, is that more and more women are getting into it, as evidenced in the various student programs around the world and all that. In the meantime, I've picked out 10 female composers who I think are worth exploring. And some of them are well-known, others less so. There is no particular sequence to the order, but I've tried to arrange the cues in an order that shows some of the stylistic versatility, at least, that is apparent in these composers' works. Now, the first composer I've chosen is somewhat of an interesting case because she actually used to be a man, but then had a sex change in the 70s. And I'm sure many of the listeners have guessed it. I'm obviously talking about Wendy Carlos. Wendy Carlos. She's an American composer born in 1939, and she was a pioneer in terms of using synths and electronics in her appropriation of classical and popular music. In 1968, for example, she released an album called Switched on Bach, which was various compositions by Johann Sebastian Bach, which she then transcribed primarily to a Moog synthesizer, which was perhaps considered a bit controversial at the time, but also quite groundbreaking. And this album became wildly popular, and it brought her to the attention of a certain film director named Stanley Kubrick. And Kubrick used Carlos in two of his most famous films, A Clockwork Orange from 1971 and The Shining from 1980. Of course, later she also composed the music for the original Tron film from Disney, utilizing both orchestra and synths. And I'm actually not quite sure if the new Tron film references that score in a way, the new score by Daft Punk, if there's any kind of reference to the Carlos score. I'm not quite sure, but it was quite pioneering also in its sort of use of orchestra and synths combined. But I do feel it's hard to avoid the excellence and the influence, really, of A Clockwork Orange, because it's such a seminal film, It's a satire of youth culture and violence and the media. And once again, Carlos rearranges the classical pieces by the likes of Beethoven and Rossini by using the Moogs and vocoders to give the film a very sort of stylized, edgy ambience. Perhaps the music is also a sort of commentary about the shallowness of the culture and the lack of humanity in the characters. So I wanted to play the famous title music from the film, which is Carlos' take and restructuring of the piece Music for the Funeral of Queen Mary by Henry Purcell, to sort of give you an idea about this musical approach. So, title music from A Clockwork Orange from 1971 with music by Wendy Carlos. That was the title music from A Clockwork Orange, with music by Wendy Carlos. The next composer I've chosen is the English composer Anne Dudley, born in 1956. To some of you, she might be familiar from the 80s synth-pop band Art of Noise, but she has had considerable success as a film composer as well. She even won an Academy Award for her music to the film The Full Monty in 1998, a somewhat controversial pick at the time, since many suspected that the Academy really voted for the many songs in the film rather than the score. Be that as it may, Dudley has more than proven her capability in many other scores, including Paul Verhoeven's latest film Black Book from 2006, and especially in the film that I want to highlight here, namely American History X from 1998. The film is, as many of you know, a tale about two brothers who get caught up in the neo-Nazi movement. And then we see how the younger brother, played by Edward Furlong, is constantly influenced by his older brother, played by Edward Norton. Maybe actually Edward Norton's best role to date. And the music responds to the character's development, at times brooding and dark, but mostly sort of grand and almost operatic in a way. And this goes especially for the climax track, Benedictus, which is, if memory serves, a sort of final absolution for one of the brothers. And you can hear it especially in the elements of choir and sort of the long epic melody line. So here is Benedictus from American History X, music by Ann Dudley. That was the track Benedictus from American History X with music by Ann Dudley. Now, I've chosen another relatively young American composer by the name of Deborah Lurie. Now, Lurie has composed film music since the late 90s and is perhaps most famous for her films George Lucas in Love. She did the remake of Footloose, And she did the concert film with Justin Bieber, Never Say Never. And then she also has a couple of collaborations with Danny Elfman, among them Deep Sea 3D, which was an IMAX movie, and also the animated film Nine. But she also has a fruitful collaboration with the Swedish director Lasse Hallström, and has composed the music to three of his films, among them An Unfinished Life from 2005, with Robert Redford as a rancher in Wyoming who has to mend his relationship to his daughter-in-law, played by Jennifer Lopez. And so for this film, Lurie taps into a sort of, well, down and dirty Americana, complete with the fiddles and various other earthly colors, but also with a sort of sense of bitter sweetness, which is, of course, quite typical of many relationship dramas. I think it's a very nice track that is somewhere in the territory of Thomas Newman, maybe, and some of Elfman's more mellow scores. So this is the main theme from An Unfinished Life from 2005. That was the main theme from An Unfinished Life, with music by Deborah Lurie. one of the most influential voices, literally, in film music land of the last 20 or 25 years have been Lisa Gerrard, who came to prominence through the band Ted Can Dance in the 80s. But the imprint that she has made mostly has to do with wordless female vocals with a sort of Middle Eastern harmony that became all the rave in the early 2000s and maybe even to this day. Gerrard has collaborated with many great composers, including Hans Zimmer on Gladiator. Maybe the film that truly popularized that particular sound. But she has actually composed several scores on her own, and not only the vocal parts, but the whole thing. And an example of that is the film A Whale Rider from New Zealand, from 2003, which tells the story of the young girl, Kahu, who wants to become a chief for her tribe, but who is confronted with various conservative views from her tribesmen, who believe that the role is reserved for males. So we follow her journey to social acceptance, in a way. And Gerrard's score plays upon the tribe's connection with nature, with many sort of ambient and moody tracks that are both very literal and psychological at the same time. It's quite fascinating, actually. And I wanted to play a track called Journey Away, which sort of describes the beginning of Kehu's journey through a very slow but gradual build-up. That was the track Journey Away from the film Whale Rider, music by Lisa Gerrard. It's quite a curious thing, actually, because the next composer is also a man who has gone through a sex change and then become a woman. And I'm talking about the British composer Angela Morley, born as Walter Stott in 1924 and passed away in 2009 at age 84. Now, Morley, she had a long and varied career, and she even worked on television shows like Dynasty and Dallas. But she is perhaps most known for her music to the popular animated film Watership Down from 1978. Watership Down was based on the book by Richard Adams and told the story about a group of rabbits who flee from their warden to find a new home somewhere else, and then they have to go through various challenges along the way. But like other stories of its kind, like for example George Orwell's Animal Farm, it's more than just a children's story. It also has lots of sort of religious symbolism and very clear political and mythological references. For example, to Virgil's Aeneid and to Homer's The Odyssey. And Morley's music sort of alternates between this very lush, pastoral writing on one hand, and then a sort of a very dry orchestral sound for the action and the suspense. Lots of muted brass and so on. Meaning that there's actually quite a great dynamic between these two aspects. There's also a beautiful rendition of Art Garfunkel's song Bright Eyes, but I wanted to play a selection of the instrumental score, and more specifically the end titles, which sum up some of these ideas, both the drama and the heart of the story. So these are the end titles from Watership Down from 1978, with music by Angela Morley.
Thank you.
That was the entitles from Watership Down with music by Angela Morley. Now, for the next composer, I want to go all the way to Japan and to a composer named Yoko Kanno, born in 1967, one of the rising stars of Japanese film music in recent years. And Kanno is very often associated with anime films and video games, perhaps. But she's also composed several live-action film scores for several Japanese New Wave directors. And she's done concert works, and she's done commercials, and she's even released pop albums. So she's quite versatile. And among the anime films that she's done, perhaps the most famous are the Ghosts in the Shell sequels and Makiros Plus from 1994. And perhaps also the film that I want to play for you now, Memories, also known as Otomo Katsuhiro's Memories, was a film from 1995. It was an anthology film that explored three different stories based on three manga short stories. And Kanno worked on the first of these, named Magnetic Rose. This story begins almost alien-like, with sort of space explorers answering to a distress call from a space station. But then the film ventures into almost 2001 territory, as the station is revealed to contain 18th century European architecture with opera singers and so on. It's a sort of bizarre mix that is quite typical Japanese in a way. And if the film is fascinating, well, so is the score. The centerpiece is really the chorale, which is a gloriously beautiful choral piece accompanied by a solo saxophone. That's quite a unique and rare combination in any kind of music, I think. And I want to play that piece for you now. So this is the chorale from Memories, composed by Yoko Kanno. That was the beautiful chorale from the anime film Memories with music by Yoko Kanno. Now, the next selection is probably the most famous of all the composers I've chosen, as she's the first ever female composer to receive an Academy Award. And I'm talking about Rachel Portman from Britain, born in 1960. And not just any films, many of these films are sort of big productions, very often costume dramas of various kinds, like The Jawlak Club, Benny and Yoon, Emma, the Jane Austen story that landed her the Oscar in 1996, The Cider House Rules, Chocolat, Roman Polanski's Oliver Twist. And also the one I want to highlight now, which is the film Nicholas Nickleby from 2002. Like so many other of Portman's assignments, this is also a sort of historical epic, this time from the world of Charles Dickens, about the young boy, Nicholas, who has to find work after his father's death and sort of ends up in a troublesome boarding house. And Portman, she does what she knows best, that is composing wistful, almost bittersweet melodies in the tradition of Georges Delerue, and doing variations of that theme throughout the film. It's in many ways a cousin to the wonderful themes for Chocolat and The Cider House Rules, and sort of tends to stick in your mind for quite a long time. So this is the main title theme from Nicholas Nickleby, from 2002, with music by Rachel Portman. Thank you. That was the main theme from Nicholas Nickleby, music composed by Rachel Portman. Now, the next composer is quite exciting, actually. Born in 1975, she's the youngest of my selection, but she's been doing film scores since the early 2000s. Her name is Jane Antonia Cornish. She's from Britain, and she studied at the Royal College of Music in London, among others. She's already written several concert works, and she had a big breakthrough with the film Fireflies in the Garden in 2008, which was a drama starring Julia Roberts, and Willem Dafoe, Emma Watson, and other big stars. But I want to draw attention to a Danish children's film that she did in 2007 called Island of the Lost Souls, or in Danish/Norwegian, De fortapte sjeles ø. I haven't seen it myself, but I know it's a fantasy film, and even without knowing anything about the production values, the music certainly makes it seem like one of the biggest adventure films that even Hollywood could produce. It's that massive. Huge orchestral forces accompanied by an equally huge choir. And it doesn't hold anything back in terms of creating scope and size for a small Danish film, relatively speaking. And if there was ever any prejudice about women being unable to compose more testosterone-filled scores, well, this is one of those that disprove it. Here's the opening theme from Island of the Lost Souls by Jane Antonia Cornish. That was the opening theme from Island of the Lost Souls, or De fortapte sjeles ø, by British composer Jane Antonia Cornish. All right, we have two more to go. And first off is another British composer, namely Debbie Wiseman. Debbie Wiseman, born in 1963. Wiseman has also had an interesting career. Not only does she compose music and film scores, she's also a conductor of other people's works, and she gives lectures and is even a TV and radio personality in Britain, appearing on such things as the BBC Proms, for example. Now, some of the films she's worked on might not be the most famous. I can only think of Arsène Lupin from 2005 is a film that maybe someone has heard of. But that doesn't negate the quality of the music, of course. And I've actually picked out a Channel 4 TV series from 2011 instead of a film. And that was a series called The Promise. It's about a young woman who goes to present-day Israel and Palestine to trace the roots of her grandfather who served as a soldier when Palestine was under British mandate in the years following the Second World War. And the music constantly reflects the musical traditions of these countries. It's mostly moody and textural, with only sort of small fragments of melodies throughout. But you can almost feel the sizzling atmosphere and the drama of the locations in many of the tracks. A sort of discrete use of ethnic elements, if you will. And you can hear it quite clearly in the track Gaza, which just sort of chugs along with some slight Arabic vocal influences. So I want to play that track for you. This is Gaza from the TV series The Promise, with music by Debbie Wiseman. That was the track Gaza from the television series The Promise from 2011, with music by Debbie Wiseman. So, our 10th and final selection of female film composers. It's perhaps not accidental that she comes last, because she's one of the most influential female film composers in terms of getting assignments more often associated with male composers, genres like action, horror, and science fiction. And I'm obviously talking about the American composer Shirley Walker, born in 1945 and died all too soon in 2006. Like previously mentioned, Jane Antonia Cornish, she usually operated with orchestras in the traditional symphonic idiom, and worked on films like Escape from LA, Willard, the Final Destination movies, or the underrated television series Space Above and Beyond. My selection, however, is from an animated film from 1993. And it's a film called Batman, The Mask of the Phantasm. It was a feature-length film based on the popular TV series, Batman the Animated Series. And, of course, there's no denying that it owes a great deal of influence to Danny Elfman's music for the Batman films, because that was sort of the trend at the time. And it has the same Wagnerian scope, very gothic, very big, very dramatic. But at the same time, it has its own flavor with some fantastic choral writing and at times very complex action writing as well. And a cue that exemplifies both of these aspects is the main titles itself, which is a sort of mini suite in a way that paints Gotham in all its dark and brooding colors. So this is the main titles from Batman, The Mask of the Phantasm, with music by Shirley Walker. That was the opening titles from Batman, Mask of the Phantasm, with music composed and conducted by Shirley Walker. Right, I thought that was a fitting ending to this episode, since it sort of exemplified a challenge to the prejudice that I mentioned earlier, that female composers are only able to compose a certain type of music for a certain type of film. If anything, this episode has shown that female composers are just as versatile as male composers, and that it's all about the musical talent, regardless of sex or anything else. If anyone has any opinions as to why film music is so male-dominated, well, they're free to discuss it in the comments field. As I said, I'm not going to rant on about that now. I mean, there can be all sorts of reasons for it. But I do hope that I've sort of managed to provide a sampling of some interesting composers that just happen to be female. That's what I wanted, anyway. I want to thank you for listening to my warped English in this episode. Hopefully it will run a bit more smoothly in the coming international editions, and I do hope you will stick with me then. The next episode will revert back to Norwegian for a topic that I haven't yet decided upon. But until then, I say happy listening.